Welcome to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And today we are continuing what'll be a theme for the week, which is some year-in-review conversation. What happened in 2016? What's shaping up in 2017? Touching on all the favorite topics that you had this year. And we absolutely wanted to touch on black culture and how that's intersected with progressive movements and things happening all across the community. And we have a fantastic lineup of people, as we always do, to discuss this with us here with in studio with us. We have Tracy Redd, who's an organizer and activist with BYP 100 in D.C. Dane Figueroa Adidi, who's black, Cuban, indigenous, Nigerian trans woman. She's a performance artist, playwright, advocate, and this is big here, the first trans woman of color to publish a book in D.C. So we've got history makers on this show. And Paul Oakley Stovall, who's an actor and activist. He was the national trip director for Bernie Sanders in 2016 as he ran for president and is currently on the writing staff of Survivor's Remorse, which is a comedy on Stars that I believe has a connection to LeBron James. Either way, thank all of you for joining the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Dane, I'll start with you. Interesting thing that I saw when we were preparing for the show is that the British Academy of Film and Television Arts, BAFTA, announced that beginning in 2019, works that do not demonstrate inclusivity in their production practices will no longer be eligible for the Outstanding British Film or Outstanding Debut by a British Writer, Director, or Producer Awards at the annual BAFTAs. Now, obviously, that is across the pond, but that struck me as a very notable thing to happen now that even in awards shows, some sort of criteria for diversity is being built in to some degree.
I think that that's what should happen, right? I think we should have more than that. I'm the type of person where, like, yes, I believe in giving credit where credit is due, but I also believe that we should also give credit in retrospect, right? Mm. And so black people, trans people, LGBTQ people have always been amazing curators of art, artists, developers and initiators of culture, trends, all of these things. And so I'm not going to pat them on the back. They should be doing that. Mm. That's like what they should do, because nobody pats us on the back for creating
right. All
the things that everyone enjoy.
No, I think that's a very good point. And Paul, you're working in Hollywood, and this has been a pretty consistent refrain that people have had about the Academy, whichever the whole name of it that does the Oscars and things like that, that they don't really have any sort of, you know, legitimate or knowledgeable or measurable criteria, especially as it concerns, and this is what the BAFTAs are speaking to, not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera. Obviously, Matt Damon had some controversial comments this year regarding that, the lack of importance of that kind of thing. So, I mean, I wonder how this strikes you over in what's happening in the UK and, you know, how you see that could or could not or should be intersecting with some of what you're seeing in Hollywood.
Well, I think that I'm the unicorn in the room, in our writer's room, in Survivor's Remorse. You know, in Hollywood, you can't help but talk about awards at some point. I mean, I guess it's a good thing, but it's still from the gaze of white people trying to tell us that we deserve to have some sort of a place in their world. I mean, these are people that have erased us from, we're indigenous to every country on this planet. They've erased us from Germany, from you go to Warsaw and there's statues of black goddesses. You go to Mexico, there's statues of African deities thousands of years before Christopher Columbus accidentally stumbled onto one part of Central America. He never even touched American soil. I mean, the word America is an Italian dude's name, you know, that we forced on the native indigenous people here. So, yeah, okay, you want to say you're going to diversify. I mean, real diversity would be turn it over to us. We're the originals.
Come on now. Come on now.
And let us include you now and then in the stories, because it's not diversity to put a black person in the role of a royal person in the 15th century in England. That's reality. That's not diversity. You know what I mean? So you act like you're doing us a favor. So I'm kind of like, I'm just more excited that at the NAACP Image Awards, there was so much content that there were actually people left out. And to me, that was a beautiful thing, that there was so much Atlanta. And that's what excites me, that we need to make our own shit. But good for them.
You know, Tracy, I'm curious how you're intersecting with this this conversation, because it seems that there is something of a connection. I could be wrong, but it feels like there's something of a connection that, you know, we've seen, I think, the movement for Black Lives kind of start to come into its own. And then also in 2016, at least for some time, it seemed to me maybe one of the more diverse offerings in array of things produced by about starring Black people in the cultural world.
I would definitely say, well, I would have to say my favorite show of 2016 was Queen Sugar on OWN.
Woo, yes. Just,
yes, I'm just going to put that out there. And to see a show like that where they enter, where they have one of the main characters be a Black Lives Matter or activist for the movement for Black Lives down in New Orleans, and or that, you know, still talking about some of the struggles that Black people have, you know, post-Katrina, but also this main character being in love with a white police officer, which people like, why would they do that? I'm like, because lots of Black activists are in relationships with white people, you know, so it reflects, like Paul said, our reality, and it brings to the forefront. You know, I was channel surfing last night, and something came on. It was like one of those little cop shows, and it was about police brutality against a Black person. You know, so like we even in white shows, you know, we see Black Lives Matter seeping into it, because you can't help but to talk about it on whatever level, if it's like artists or singers, you know, stuff talking about in their songs, or if it's like the TV shows with all Black actors and all Black directors. You know, I love Queen Sugar because it's not only Black, but it's also full of women of color as well. All the directors of that show are women of color, you know. That's just dope.
Black people are not a monolith, right? And so, like, it is very steeped in white supremacist ideology to believe that Black people are only one thing. Oh, I see a Black person, they must be this thing. And so many people in the arts have imitated that white supremacist ideology, right? And so, like, you see the Black girl in a play, if you can tell who it's written by, if it's written by a white person, she got to do this or that, right? And so, like, you had actually this conversation is historically based. I mean, you had people like Aida Walker in the 1920s, who was a vaudeville star. She was called the Queen of the Cakewalk, and her husband and his writing partner were pushing against stereotypes of mammy and whore. And so Black people have always been everything. We have been everything. We've been fierce. We've been lovely. We have been all the things. And so I think now what's happening is that we are no longer going to accept the scraps that are given us when we have created the feast.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I have to say, my favorite show of the year, also Oprah Winfrey Network, Greenleaf. I really love the show. I was resistant. You know, my father's a preacher, so I'm very resistant to like anything about the quote unquote church. And it blew me away. And I just thought the fact that they were willing to show like the Black religious, at least Black Christian religious experience in the mega church world in its full, I mean, all the issues, you know what I'm saying? From gender and sexuality issues to domestic violence issues to, you know, to what does it mean to believe in God? I mean, the fact that all these different things that are conversations all of us have every day, which is why I really loved your point, Dane, is like, okay, now this is on this show. I could not get enough of it. And so that for me as a longtime critic to some degree of Oprah really helped open my eyes. And I think she's producing a lot of things, and Tracy makes a good point. And I wonder, Paul, as well, in relationship to that, I mean, you're sort of in an interesting space in a way. I mean, you're helping writing a show about the athlete and in the professional sports or a retired athlete, which has been a space where a lot of, you know, sort of quote unquote Black Lives Matter stuff has happened. You're working just as a writer, and you were helping as an advance person for Senator Bernie Sanders. And I mean, I wonder how you see the way these worlds seem to be, I don't know, starting to just overlap a little bit more.
First, let me sneak in on Queen Sugar. One thing I love about it is
don't sneak it in. Give it its full due.
I got to throw it in. The show is so crafty because while it is about all those things, it is really just about these people. And that's the sneaky thing about it. And I think it has a lot to do with having female directors. I don't know who's all on the writing staff, but it's about these brothers and sisters that are trying to save the crop. I mean, that's what it's about. And if you keep it about that, then the other things that color their lives show them in three dimensions. And that's why I dig the show so much. And I'm going to check out Greenleaf. On Survivor's Remorse, Does somebody want to chime in on that?
No. I was saying, I think that that's the brilliance of being a good writer, right? And because so much when you're Black, when you're trans, when you're queer, when you're this, they're always trying to tokenize us, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you can only write, if you're a trans writer, you can only write the trans story. Or if you're the trans actress, you can only play the trans character. But the reality...
Well, yeah, I mean, they think you wake up in the morning and say, ooh, I'm trans. Why am I trans today? We don't wake up saying, ooh, I'm Black. So let me see how I'm going to be Black today. We wake up and say, my shoulder hurts. I slept weird on the, right, you know, or I got to call my mother because whatever's going on.
Right.
But let me get back to you. So on Survivor's Remorse, it is actually very loosely based on LeBron's life. And the player is not retired. He is starting his career. Mm. So it's about this family that was very, very, very poor, single mother. It's very much modeled on LeBron's, how he came up. And now he's drafted in the NBA, so now they're the Black Beverly Hillbillies. So now they are these Black people who had every socioeconomic problem that people in that economic structure have, and now they have none of those problems. So there's complex comedy in it, but then there's also, well, who am I now? Because now the thing that I thought defined me, having nothing, is gone away, and now they have to look at each other. So again, we're just seeing Black people in three dimensions. Well, how that crosses over in politics is they are calling upon themselves as a family in our show to be responsible about pulling others up. And how responsible are you? Is he lucky because he can put a ball in a hoop, so he needs to really give back? Or is he like, hey, you know, this is what I can do. This is the way the world is. I'm taking care of me. I love Black people being faced with the same existential crisis that everybody else is faced with. We have the same wants and needs as everybody else. Am I responsible for that person over there? Or do they need to get their act together and do their own thing? Mm. I'm not sure who was talking earlier about us as a monolith, but politically, are we responsible for each other? Or are you responsible just for your circle of friend group? Or is it just your family? Or is it just you? These are the great existential questions of the great philosophers who, by the way, took all of their writings from African writings. You know, the library was in Alexandria, not in Greece. And Plato and Socrates stole all that stuff from Black people.
Well, The Black Athena by Martin Brunel may be interested to people. If you're curious about learning more about that, you have time over the holidays to read, perhaps. But I think it's a great point you raise, and I'll turn it back to you on this too, Dane, in terms of responsibility of like who you pull up and how you do it. I remember my sister's a screenplay writer, and she and I had this argument one time about Tyler Perry, and I was just I called her up explicitly because it was when he did the lead in, oh man, what was the book series that was also Morgan Freeman did a couple movies related to it. Oh my God, Alex Cross.
I just said Alex Cross.
Oh my bad.
Racist, gay, racial.
Well, I mean, hey, call me out, man. That's what we call him in by calling him out. And nevertheless, I mean, it was interesting because I was like, so I'm ripping him. And then my sister, she waited for me to finish. And she was like, it's not that I don't hear you. And then just listed like 15 people she knew who his company was promoting them and producing their stuff and bringing it out. And it was, I mean, everything you could possibly think of. And so she was like, what you see on the outside is him, he's getting this money, but then he's coming back and, you know, doing it. And I thought, what is the responsibility, if any, of the Black artists, athletes, entertainers that make it to then try to put that next step up there? Mm.
Is he paying them a living wage, though? Because let's be real. I understand, right? Like, I totally, because where they're, who, though, you know, listen, my mom was an evangelist. I grew up in the church, right? So sometimes I got to use the scriptures for people to get it, right? Yes. The Bible says, to whom much is given, much is required. And we are all struggling. Tyler Perry isn't the only person who was homeless and now has a job or now is doing something. I was homeless last year.
Right.
So, like, and I'm not saying it, you know, I made less than $10,000 this year, too. Mm. So, like, but I have done with what I got. I make space for my community. So, I grew up in a family. My aunt Liz, she was a jazz singer. She was an academic. She was the first person in my family to graduate from school, from college. And she also was an educator. She was the first curator of the Great Blacks and Whites Museum in Baltimore. And so I grew up understanding that I have a responsibility, if for nothing else, to bring the mirror to my people. And so what that means is that means in that reflection, is our ancestors, pre-colonization, pre all of that, all the way back to the very first mother. So I think that we all have a responsibility to community, because really, if you ever look at anybody who is quote unquote marginalized, right? I like to say really oppressed, who is oppressed and has made it. They really are built off of the backs of their people. Right. So like whenever I look at anyone in Hollywood, it really is their community who made them when white people wasn't thinking about them at all. Right. So we do have a responsibility to make space. I don't really like to say pull up because that's a very like white supremacist ideology and exceptionalism, right? Mm-hmm. But we realize we all work hard, right? Like sometimes people, the system is the system and it's designed to not have any of us survive. But it really is about making space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is our responsibility to make space for others when we are in a space.
No, I think it's a good point. Trace, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, coming from the activist and organizing, aspect of when I was in Charlotte, I was on the show back then.
Right.
Talking about, but when I was in Charlotte, people had oh, I have a house, like they said, they physically was making space for me and other people to come in. I feel like once you get to a point where you no longer are struggling in a sense monetarily, you do have responsibility. You have a calling, because you can do whatever you want, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like because you are here because of someone else that couldn't make it, it's your responsibility to make sure that others have that same opportunities and those same resources. As activists and organizers, I don't make any money. I'm poor. I'm homeless myself right now. But I have access to resources that other people in my community don't have access to. I have access to people, white activists and organizers who have money. So I make space for my people to have space to get those same resources. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just who we are as people to make sure that we're all taken care of.
No, I think you're 100% right. I've said this to so many people over the past couple of years. I felt that's where Wesley Snipes really went wrong. I hate to just call him out because I love Wesley Snipes.
Oh,
but when
God.
He was like, I don't want to make any black movies. I just want to do action films. Even though he's a good action star, it was like, there's no way this is going to work out the way that you think it is. Like,
and where is he now? Where
I
is
feel
he
like,
now?
And like now, and the only time I see Wesley Snipes is like late night on Stars, like the the 15th installment of some Jean-Claude Van Damme action film, and my brother just trying to get his tax money paid back up, just the whole nine. But the reality, it's like I first even saw Tyler Perry, honestly, a bootleg DVD sitting on top of my mom's DVD DVD player of a play. Like it was someone who just taped the play and then turned into this huge, massive thing. And I think sometimes we forget, which is why I really loved your point, Dane, like who it was that set the table. I mean, I don't really know of any black, well, I don't know, maybe there's some, but like really what the community that set the table to be able to lift people up in such a way that was possible for sure. So, I mean, I think definitely a relevant point. And there's much more that we want to say on all of this. We're getting ready to take a break here, and then we're going to come right back with more on all of this, how art, culture, politics, all of that is intersecting in 2016, what we can and should expect as we move forward to 2017. So, as always, here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear. Stay with us.
By Any Means Necessary.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And we are continuing our year in review and perhaps, let's say, first quarter 2017 preview, as it were, here really with a big focus on culture, but also how that's intersecting with so many other things. And we are very happy to continue to be joined by Tracy Redd, organizer and activist with BYP 100, Black Youth Project 100, here in Washington, D.C. Dane Figueroa Adidi, who's Black, Cuban, Indigenous, Nigerian trans woman. She's a performance artist, playwright, advocate, and first trans woman of color to publish a book in D.C. We've got the history makers here. And then also we are joined by Paul Oakley Stovall. He's an actor and an activist. He was a trip director for Bernie Sanders in 2016 and currently is on the writing staff of Survivor's Remorse, which you can see on the Stars Network. And so we'll just keep rolling here and perhaps try to talk about some particular controversies. I'll start with maybe what the biggest one was, I think, in terms of Black arts and culture in 2016, the Birth of a Nation controversy. You talked about this a couple times on the show. Obviously, when the movie, last times we talked about this, the movie had not come out. So the issue was whether or not it was going to do well. It obviously did not do well. So different takes on this. Tracy, I'll start with you. I mean, you know, the movie, the Nate Parker rape controversy obviously tanked the movie itself. Some people felt that was unfair. Had he been white, this never would have happened. Other people felt like in this era, 2016, with sort of unprecedented focus, I think, around the intersections of gender and race and sexual violence, that, you know, basically he kind of got what he deserved, and this is what takes place. So not sure if you saw the movie and want to comment on that, but at least the controversy itself.
No, I did not see, for the record. But as a rape survivor myself, you know, I feel like Black people, God bless Black people. I love y'all so much. But, you know, to hear so many Black people saying, oh, they're just trying to keep a Black man down. Mm. And, you know, they're doing this because he's Black. I'm like, sometimes, like, we can't keep playing the oppressed card. Like, I'm sorry. That's my unpopular opinion for 2016. You know, sometimes we do have to take responsibility. I hear Black people that say, oh, F the police and the justice system isn't, like, doesn't do justice. Also saying, oh, well, Nate Parker wasn't charged for raping. I'm like, so now all of a sudden you believe in a justice system that doesn't indict police officers that kill Black people. You're confusing me. I'm confused. Leave that in 2016. But the person is no longer with us. I think people don't realize that. The person in that case, the woman is no longer physically living, you know, so we can't ask her, like, about any of these things now, so we have to go off what we know. I personally don't want to see the movie because of that. I just can't, you know. What does that look like if I would see a bootleg if somebody to get me a copy. Right. I'm not going to lie. But I will not pay my own money to go see a movie that supports. I mean, I try to do that with any movie, whether you're Black or white. If you're accused of doing something that does harm to another person that's oppressed, especially, I'm not going to financially support you. Mm. If someone takes me on a date and they pay, then yeah, that's fine. But I just can't. I have this moral of myself. I just cannot support. Like, I don't eat at certain restaurants here in D.C. because they oppress Black people even more. Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna say no names because they might be listening.
Dane, your take on some of the controversy swirling here.
I will repeat what I said earlier. We're at the time when the scraps won't do. Mm. Right? And we're also at the period of time in which Black men, particularly Black cis men, can no longer abuse us and we be okay with it. We just can't. So, you know, when I think about, I talk about this often because I'm also, you know, a survivor, and how the act of silencing was really a coping mechanism for so many of us who are Black, rightfully so, right? Like, you know, the plantation owner would rape you, and then you'd have to get up and you'd have to work. But it's time for healing. Mm-hmm. And I think what 2016 gave us more than anything was it causes us all to face the reality of what is happening. And it's bringing up all the old things and all the old trauma, and it's saying you have to deal with it. Mm. As far as the movie is concerned, I also did not watch the movie, but I did hear that there was a rape scene in it. And I felt really angry about that because you don't have to make up a thing, right? Particularly when you have been a part of it. Because let's also be honest that it was written by two people. It was Nate Parker and it was his writing partner, right, who was who did actually get charged, right? And
thank
so, like, people forget that it was both of them, and also that Nate Parker still made his millions of dollars because they gave him the money. So it, you know, but realistically, right? Like, when we look at the story of Nat Turner, I understand historically, like, changing things to make it more whatever, but Nat Turner really. He did. The motivation was simply that he was an enslaved black person. Right. And that should have been enough. Mm-hmm. Right. That should have been enough. And also the thing about what Nat Turner's story teaches is that black people have always been thinking intersectionally. Mm. Because realistically, when you look at the history books, he actually didn't kill poor white people because he believed that the system also victimized them. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't like this revolution that he had was just like, we're going to fight the system in this way, because it was also steeped in a certain respectability politics. It was also steeped in a certain shift, wanting to shift the positionality within the structure, but not always just trying to abolish the structure. So my feeling is, you know, black men can't be abusive to us anymore. I'm sorry. You can't do it. Sorry.
We're not taking that message from 2017.
No.
Well, certainly that'd be something that I'd be all for leaving behind. You know, Paul, I'm curious where you think about this, because the other thing, you know, there's an article in the Washington Post about this like a month ago with a guy who I guess was like an actor in the movie. And he was basically saying, I lost a lot of good opportunities because Nate Parker was so irresponsible in the way he responded and so on and so forth. But the thing that struck me is he was like, yeah, you know, I was just watching him in a press conference. And as soon as he said something, I was like, ooh, it's not going to be good. And I'm thinking, well, like, why did it take you till 8 months later to say something? Like, I'm thinking if my job is on the line and I'm like, I don't want to look bad, I would have been like, yo, I don't know about Nate Parker. I'm just in this movie. You know, he's wrong. I would have been like just out there. And it was almost like the guy was more upset that, you know, he had lost some potential role, which who knows if he had or not, than the real controversy, and now just wanted the, you know, the diversity points, I guess, with the next film producer that he said something. I don't know. Kind of an aside, but it struck me when I saw that appear in the post. But your thoughts on this whole controversy?
Well, I think that the other guests have said pretty much hit on the nail what I feel. I will add one thing, and that is that it is true that were Nate Parker a white man, things would have been handled differently by the Hollywood structure. And that's just true, because there's an actor named Casey Affleck. I don't know if you all have heard of him, but he is number one in the Oscar race this year to win an Oscar for this Manchester movie. And he has some allegations on him, but nobody's talking about it.
I never even
because
heard of
he's
that.
Been he's Ben Affleck's brother, and we're going to carry him right through. We're going Woody Allen his ass all the way through, and we don't care. Now, I don't say that to excuse Nate Parker. That actor you spoke about is actually a friend of mine I've worked with, and I have been very troubled and triggered by the silence, because I think it was Lady Dane who was talking about it. The silence. Yes, we use it as a coping mechanism, but as she said, that time is over. Mm. We have to speak out and speak up. So that's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, go ahead. Just want to add one thing. Once again, I love black people, for the record. It's on audio.
Of course. Black people, listen, I love being black. Like, black,
right.
it is amazing. Like, black people are the originators of everything, period. So, yes, I want to second that.
But, you know, like, in the sense that I love black people, but we're hurt. And hurt people hurt others. You know, so, you know, when people say, oh, I want to see the movie because I want to learn about Nate Turner, I'm like, no, there's documentaries, there's books. If you want to learn the historical standpoints of this person, you don't have to see it through this film. That's just an excuse to hurt other black people.
Yeah, please, Paul, go ahead.
And can we please stop raping women on screen and just having woman's role in films be about being victimized?
Right.
Can we stop doing that?
Right.
Anytime soon would be good. Anytime would be good.
Don't do that.
Why is that? I didn't see the movie either, but why is that woman mute for most of the film?
I heard,
just a victim. Mm. I don't understand none of that. We have to stop doing that.
Right.
Women have other stories to tell. And frankly, Nat Turner is a very interesting historical figure, but why do black people only have Nat Turner, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman? And you know, we have Musu. We are from the wealthiest man ever to live on planet Earth is a black man. Why aren't we telling that movie? Y'all know why.
Right.
Come on now. No, that's you got me in here about to shout.
It's 100% true.
I've been telling months.
I've been telling people for years that one of the greatest HBO series you could ever make, you could get a good five seasons out of it. Mary Say Conde's novel Segu from 1984.
Wait a minute. Why did you take that right out of my mouth?
Great minds think
alike.
No,
really. I wish y'all could see me. It's written on my paper right here. Don't make sure you say something about Segu. That's my favorite novel. I'm adapting it right now. I just don't know if I'm going to make it to a miniseries.
Being Lady Day.
I got all y'all because guess what? Maurice Conde, talk about intersectionality. And who was, I wish I was in the room. I don't know who was just talking about the book, but there's trans characters. There's that incredible trans character in Brazil. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Who can transform and does it. I mean, it shows us in all of our glory and power and magic that we really are. You know, brown people are the keepers of the earth, the unifiers of the soul and mind.
Yeah.
We vibrate with the planet in a different way.
Mm.
But we don't tell those stories. We're raising a whole generation, making them think the only thing we did was run.
Mm. and realistically, realistically, there is even like Mary Ellen Pleasant, right? Like who was a millionaire at the, you know, she moved out west. She was an enslaved black woman. She moved out west. She opened up several businesses and was exchanging information, and she had restaurants, and she would actually hire enslaved black people who had run to freedom. And so we have so many stories, even within the time of, you know, even within the time of Western slavery.
American slavery.
Right. Yeah. To like so many people who were doing some revolutionary things and were wealthy, right?
Mm.
They assumed that all we did was like have shackles on us, but some people did actually become millionaires and use that money to liberate their people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an important thing to say, because white supremacy says that we can't, right? It says we have to rely on white people to speak for us and to lead us to freedom and to do all these things. When realistically, we have been the backbone, we have been the swords, we have been the shields, we have been the breast upon which people rest, right? Like we have been all of these things.
I'm gonna shout.
Like from the beginning of time. So it's not just like
right.
So
right. Wait, you said you have some relationship to the church there?
Just
a little bit.
Yes, I felt the spirit.
Paul, go ahead.
Well, and that's the thing to watch out for, because in 2017, I was just talking to a friend about identity politics. I said, how do you think it failed? He said, it didn't fail. White identity politics worked just fine in 2016.
Mm, yep.
Because they identified themselves and they did what they had to do. And you better watch out. In 2017, they're going to come for religion.
Mm, yep.
So we're going to watch this discussion start to veer and change and morph into how do we continue to make space and how do we continue to protect what we believe in when they're going to come for that next.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that the point
trying to scare nobody,
on Donald Trump's 10-point program for Black America is protect the African-American church.
Wait, he had a 10-point plan for...
Yo, there is a 10-point plan. There is a Trump-Pence 10-point plan, and it's not good. I'm just going to...
Because that's the trick, you all. That's the trick. They, you know, they see us as being in shackles, breaking those shackles, and praying.
Right.
But see, they don't understand what our prayer does. So they try to distill it down to just rocking back and forth and mumbling some stuff they don't understand. So we cannot let them distill prayer into, you know, something that just hopefully protects us from being hurt by somebody. That's not what we're doing.
Mm.
So we just have to be clear about it. We got to be strong about it. We have to, you know, keep pushing it out and not go inward as this new government tries to close in on us.
Mm. Well, I think that's true. Well, and it raises another sort of, I think, crucial issue for sure, which is, and this has obviously been big in 2016, is sort of the political uses of black culture. You know, it sort of happened in two ways, actually both involving Beyonce, believe it or not. One with the piece at the Super Bowl, so sort of at the beginning of the year, the formation piece, the homage to the Black Panthers and things that were going on around that, also in the video, and then later in the year, being big out there for Hillary Clinton. It was sort of interesting because on the first one, everyone was like, or not everyone, but everyone someone who agreed with the message was excited. I was excited. I didn't even know. And then when it turned out that like some Black Lives Matter activists had gotten them to sign about Mario Woods and the whole thing that they did, thought that was cool. Then the Hillary Clinton piece. I mean, not only was I not really feeling her, but I'm also thinking like, I mean, if I'm going to go to like a Beyonce, Jay-Z concert, I need them to go like 10 more songs deep. Like, I don't need Hillary Clinton to come on stage. Like, I don't need all that. And it's like Pusha T is out here with Tim Kaine playing his harmonica. Just something about it didn't feel right. So, Tracy, I don't know what you're thinking about this. I mean, obviously, the sort of political scene is more relevant to the culture, which I think is great. But then it's also, there's that double-edged sword.
First of all, I was brought in specifically because I knew you were going to come for Beyonce. I would not let you come for my mother. But at the same time, you know, like I said last time you brought up Beyonce, you know, no one is too high on a pedestal to be called in. I love Beyonce, for the record, so everyone can hear. But at the same time, no, I don't like Hillary. You know, it's like, it reminded me, I didn't see the whole video because I literally just could not watch Beyonce with Hillary on a stage. I just could not watch it. It reminded me of, like, how do we try to get in good? I'm like, maybe she misses the White House and she was hoping she got in so her and Blue could still come to the Easter egg roll. I don't know. Like, there must have been something that was benefiting Beyonce for her to do this because ain't no way. Can I say? Ain't no way.
It's a place.
It's a place that I don't want to go. It's called America. But, you know, I just can't, you know, it's like, it reminds me of like those house Negroes, you know, those house slaves, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be good, or those overseers, you know, I'm going to be nice to the white people so that I don't feel their wrath, you know. So when Hillary's winning, I'm like, oh, I was there. And to use that, oh, you know, I'm a feminist, you know, first of all, white feminists, that's a whole nother conversation because, you know, they're problematic on so many levels. But, you know, for Beyonce to try to jump on that with Hillary, Hillary's an old white woman. Beyonce's
rich, old white woman who also was responsible for putting so many black bodies behind bars.
Exactly.
So it's continue.
And, you know, no, thanks for bringing that up. You know, Hillary is responsible for lots of black and brown people being in jail. Beyonce and Jay-Z bailed people out of jail in Baltimore.
Right.
That just doesn't line up at all. You know, so.
Yeah, this is challenging.
Yeah, it's challenging, you know. Like, I can't, because I'm not there when they're having these conversations. I don't know, you know, what Beyonce got out of it. She got some money out of this. Good for her. But can I get some of that? Because cooperative economics is what I need.
30 seconds to our next break, but we'll come back on this. So go ahead, Paul.
Okay, quickly. You know, being on the front lines of it, I feel like these people were trapped because once Bernie was out of it, what were your two choices? Mm. So part of it was simply feeling trapped and feeling like, well, what's my other choice? So I got problems with that, and we can backtrack to that, that whole narrative. But I want to say about the Black Panther thing, a lot of people don't know who the Black Panthers were, and white people very easily painted that narrative in a negative way when actually the Black Panthers were not violent. Right. They were caregivers to the community. They were community organizers. Right. That whole thing, I think it was a wonderful thing she did.
It was. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back on that, on By Any Means Necessary, here on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier. Stay with us.
By any means necessary.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And we are continuing today our retrospective slash look forward with how black culture and political movements are shaping up together, intersecting, working together, working apart, whatever it may be. We have and continue to be joined by our panel here, Tracy Redd, organizer and activist with the Black Youth Project 100 in D.C., Dane Figueroa Adidi, black Cuban indigenous Nigerian trans woman, performance artist, playwright, advocate. And if you didn't think already that she was accomplished, the first trans woman of color to publish a book in D.C., and Paul Oakley Stovall, an actor and an activist. He was the national trip director for Bernie Sanders in 2016 presidential bid and is currently on the writing staff of Survivor's Remorse on Stars. And Paul, I want to continue with you. You were making a good point there, I thought, in the end, in terms of the representation of the Black Panthers in popular culture and how other people are taking that. Wanted to let you finish that point.
Well, the way that it bridges into, you know, and for me, this is very personal. It still hurts what happened with Bernie and what happened with the Democratic Party. Bernie was on the front lines, and I was with him. He was meeting with Black Lives Matter representatives all throughout the campaign. When they would disrupt our rallies, Bernie didn't try to shut them down. He would just hold still and let them talk and meet with them afterwards. But that narrative, you know, Killer Mike was on the road with us, mm-hmm. Senator Nina Turner, Cornel West. We were having meetings with them every other week, talking to them, listening to them, asking them for what their agenda was, how would they like. And Bernie would be very upfront with them. You know, he was real. He was like, look, I believe in your movement. You need to do this, 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 and this. I'm from the 60s. This is how we did it. This is what you do. He was helping them. But the narrative was that he was some crazy socialist, and the narrative was that he wasn't connecting with Black people. But that was the white liberal media, headed by a woman named Rachel Maddow, who everybody loves, but I got problems with her.
Yeah, no, that's real.
She had us on the show, on her show, and was praising him, and then the next week was saying, oh, he just really needs to drop out. Why is he doing this to Hillary Clinton? Why is he doing this to her? Now, listen, we need to understand, during the major period of American slavery, who was the most vicious on the plantation? Do you all want to take a guess?
The white woman.
Come on now. Talk about it.
The white woman was the most vicious because she couldn't stand that she was being left out of the conversation, number one. And number two, that her man was going down the creek around the corner to do what he wanted to do and didn't find her to be the one he wanted. And then here come these babies that looking like Boris Kodjo, and she's having issues with that. So she would be the most vicious. She would be the most vicious physically, actually. And I think that the residue of that is still there. This entitlement, this we deserve this. Hillary deserves this. She doesn't deserve anything.
Right.
Or she didn't deserve anything. And this is hard for me to say because, you know, when you're in politics, your job is to stay neutral. And but it's all over now. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Let it go.
That's just how I feel. And it's very telling that, you know, one candidate is out there stumping hard to fight against the orange one, and that is Bernie Sanders. He's working hard. He has not stopped. And another candidate is out walking her dog in the woods and not fighting. I mean, I can understand a little bit of, oh, I'm sad I lost. But if you care so much, you were the chosen one of the Democratic Party. You need to be out there, not necessarily speaking against him, but speaking for us, unless, oop, you don't actually care as much as you pretended to.
Okay. Well, I think that's real. And I think it's a good point. And the other way it popped up in a big way in the campaign was the whole Lena Dunham thing, where unrelated to the campaign, she makes that crazy racist point about Odell Beckham. And then I'm thinking like, okay, you know, whatever, this is exactly who I thought she was, blah, blah, blah. But I'm thinking at least she's probably smart enough. She won't do anything that looks racist for the rest of the campaign because that would kill Hillary. And then she comes out with like a rap video, some sort of like bizarre rap video thing supporting Hillary Clinton. And I'm just thinking like, okay, so at this point, this is not just like you're kind of like a tone deaf person blundering through the woods, whatever. Like you just are racist and just refuse to actually change your, since you think you're a liberal, you just refuse to change anything about yourself because you quote unquote couldn't be racist. I mean, really, really a big issue, I think, Dane.
White liberalism doesn't exist. Mm. And I think that the reality, right, is that whiteness always will protect itself, and that we live in a country that has created whiteness, right? Mm. That whiteness was created, started by the Europeans, and then it was reinforced by white Americans. Purposefully to keep people out. Whiteness is exclusionary. It is violent. Mm-hmm. It is born from violence. And so the reality is that this country then reinforces this idea that whiteness is the standard. And when we look at structural oppression, right, structural oppression says that the thing that you want to be more than anything else is a cis white heterosexual man. Mm. And then it says that everyone else underneath that within the structure has to attempt to erase themselves so much, just enough so that they can get close to that. And the reality is that, like, I love being black. Blackness is dope. Like, that's number one. But then number two, like, whiteness is an illusion. It is a masquerade. It is not real. And it was created from violence. Mm. And so there are plenty. I mean, as a woman who's in this panel of amazing people, like, I have never experienced as much racism or transphobia, as they call it, which is anti-trans violence, really, than I have ever from a cis white woman. And it is because, realistically, right, on this structure, right, and what we're taught in schools is that you really, your whiteness is what you have to cherish first. And you can, and if you're a woman, then that means you're also marginalized. So you have to then try to fight against this marginalization, and you were also oppressed, and you were also all these things, when realistically, like, we all come with all of our intersections at once. Mm. And if we are ever going to play the oppression Olympics, I will always win.
Okay.
So
always.
and I agree with you, Paul. It was, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Hillary said all these things about wanting to fight for black people and all of this stuff. And my sister goddess, Venus Solanite, she has this amazing piece in her book of poems called Trigger about Hillary Clinton and about whiteness. And where is she? She's out walking her dog. And some people would say she's tried this race for so long and she keeps losing. And I would say, I'm sorry, leaders don't cry over spilled milk. They keep their word. She made a promise to Black America, and I expect for her to keep it.
I just want to say, y'all talking about white liberals, quote unquote, because they don't exist. But once again, I'm reiterate that point. But, you know, once again, because I am out there, you know, on the front lines, you know, doing marches and rallies and protests, some of my friends are the ones that protested Bernie Sanders in Boston. Just want to throw that out there. Because we everywhere.
Yeah. It's great. And I'm telling you, Bernie was not butthurt about it. He was all about it. So.
One of the most scariest moments of this year for me as an activist and organizer and a black queer person wasn't when I was chained around a neck to a ladder outside the FOP office in D.C. It wasn't when I was in the back of a paddy wagon in Baltimore City heading to Baltimore City Jail. It was the night of the election when white women were upset that Hillary Clinton lost the election and not the fact that black people are going to be killed and dying regardless of who was president.
Right.
You know, at that point, they want to be all of a sudden politicized to do something, and that's all cute and all, but the reality is that black people been fighting this fight of oppression. Mm. It brings me back to, like, the Occupy Wall Street when white people like, oh, I got to live with less, but black people been living like this. When I brought in intersectionality and the marginalized groups, like, where's the black queer people? Where's the black trans people? You know, you're upset, but what about these bodies that are in physical harm's way? Because of this new presidency that's coming. They were like, well, you know, Hillary lost because she's a woman. I'm like, but what about Black Lives Matter? You know, so just because they're pro-Hillary doesn't mean they think Black Lives Matter.
And I'm pretty sure the majority of white women voted for Trump. I mean, which
64% to be exact.
Right. So almost a supermajority.
get yourselves.
Which tells you everything you need to know to some degree. And I thought to some degree it was instructive about that whole, like, the kind of liberal, elite, white feminist mystique that all women are behind them. Because that's they speak in the name. And, you know, unfortunately, this is consistently erased. But, you know, Alice Walker raised this critique in the 80s when she started to bring forth the idea of womanism. And this is what she was basically pointing out, like, you know, the poverty, the extra racism that black women, it's like a different experience that has to be understood in its own totality. Obviously, Claudia Jones has said the similar things. Many people, and I think because Alice Walker is an artist per se, not someone who's considered like a politician, people take it less seriously, but I think it also, it has a much more mass appeal, is a very relevant point that just doesn't get brought up. It's like, well, women are going to vote for Hillary. Well, just like black people are not a monolith, neither are women. And so how could you just make these crazy pat statements unless you have this sort of bigotry that really is privileging certain voices and allowing them to speak in the name of every other person. And, you know, you get a couple tokens up there. Anybody can say anything about anything these days. I mean, Donald Trump can have a 10-point program for Black America and Kanye West. I guess that's another point in culture that I almost forgot to bring up. Kanye West and Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness, child.
I didn't even know. I'll tell you, Dane, I was sitting here, and I'm like, it was just getting into the office, getting ready to try to get it prepared, get the show together, and I look up, and, like, Kanye West is just rolling into Trump Tower. And not only that, of all the people who have gone to see Trump, the only person that he then came back down the elevator with to have a little press conference with was Kanye West. I don't even know. I don't know if the brother's still dehydrated. I don't know if this is like a secret spook that sat by the door kind of move. And 10 years from now, I'll be like, oh, Kanye was a genius. I don't know if he just is ignorant. I don't know.
It's mama's little baby, like shortening. That's what it is. This is the thing. This is the thing. Kanye West, we already know what Kanye West's thing is, right? Like, we already are pretty aware that he is okay with erasing his Blackness for money, right? Like, so I wasn't surprised by seeing that. I wasn't surprised. I do think, though, that for me, because before that, right, he had had a mental health.
Jay-Z was trying to kill him and Lil Blue Ivy.
And
it's his own words.
And so, for me, I didn't want to be distracted by him meeting with Trump. I wanted to talk about the fact that we have to begin talking about mental health within the Black community and how we are not given space to heal, right? Like, we are told, you know what, this horrible, horrible traumatic thing, right, just happened. And let me backtrack, because some people be like, well, earlier you said Hillary Clinton needs to not cry over spilt milk. No, not losing a race, but like losing your mother. Losing your mother, being raped, being, you know, losing a baby, having someone who's close to you die in front of you. Like, these are things that Black people go through every day, right? And so
over 400 years
hands
of white people.
Come on now. And so
I just need to throw that in.
What I'm saying is that we need to talk about healing and we need to talk about restoration and moving forward. So I wasn't distracted by, like, him meeting with Trump. You know, he's a Kardashian now, so that's what they do. They do antics and that's all of that is. What I wanted to talk about was us really dealing with us healing so that we then can show up whole and fight in ways that's, you know, I could say we've never fought before, but that's not true. We have been fighting like this, you know, many of us have been whole all of our lives and have, right? It's the system that told us that we were not enough, that we were not whole, that we didn't know who we were. And so that's kind of my feelings about that.
You know, mental health is real. It's an issue that needs to be dealt with. Seriously. Okay. Can you all imagine any other race of people on this planet going through what Black people have gone through for 400 years? Rape, torture, separation, which to me is the worst of all of it. And not burning this country to the ground.
Right. Right.
I mean, Black people are so nice.
We are so nice.
Because if it was up to me.
Oh, man.
Right. Now I hear you. Well, you know, and Paul, one thing is interesting to me, too, is how, because I agree with you, this, especially the conversation around mental health in our community is so important. But I find a lot of times when it portrays in this way, the Kanye way, our tendency is more to throw people away. Like when Eddie Murphy had his piece when he got arrested, it was like, I don't want to hear about Eddie Murphy. It never had to been the same. Martin Lawrence, I remember when, you know, he got arrested running down the highway. And by the way, when he did the Run Tell That stand up, he had a great little bit about that. And like what happened to him, why it happened, and like recognizing that things happen to people. But his career, never as big as it was, where it almost is like, I mean, to some degree, there's probably the Hollywood aspect that they're not going to give us as much of a second chance. But I think there's also the kind of like, they kind of embarrassed us aspect that people don't want to grapple with. Like, I mean, these are people under tremendous pressure. I mean, we all are in some different way. And like, that happens. Sometimes you fall by the wayside a little bit and it is what it is. But we tend to kind of leave people there, I think, in the sphere, as opposed to use as a learning moment. I mean, you look at like Mel Gibson, who I think doesn't deserve a pass, but he just like waits 5 years and is like, yeah, I was having a rough time. And then everyone's like, yeah, Mel Gibson, he's back. Great movie. And then that's it.
He's white.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we believe and we also believe that that money should make it okay, that Martin and Eddie and Kanye, we're not allowed to have any problems because y'all got money. So we black people, and we're not a monolith, but you know, in the social Hollywood sort of social media arena, we do sometimes fall under this false narrative of, well, you have everything, so how can you have any problems because you've got money? So you know, we all know that money doesn't solve it, but sometimes that narrative is out there in the media that nothing should ever be wrong with you because you got millions of dollars.
Right. Yeah, I just want to say real quick, you know, when it comes to Kanye, like I said, Kanye is hurt. You know, he's still grieving.
Yeah.
You know, 2016 was a year of grieving for a lot of us to some degree. And so, in my opinion, no one is disposable at all. Like Gene was saying, we're so quick to just push people to the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when they need us the most. You know, well, who's that, Kid Cudi or someone checking themselves into a mental health institute? That opened up the conversation for black men specifically talk about mental health,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was great to me because, you know, I don't like saying suffer, live, but, you know, I have mental health things, you know, that I deal with on a daily, you know, like depression and stuff like that, you know, to open up that door to have this conversation is really, really important. Like Dane said, so we can begin to heal. So we can begin to have these conversations, you know. Kanye needs somebody just sit down like, yo, look, Kanye, instead of putting all this out there for everyone to see, let's just talk like one-on-one. Let's work through some of this healing. My friend Erica Totten does emotionally matched pacing circles. Shameless plug.
I love Erica Totten.
Get this to Kanye's people. Get the announcement to Kanye's people.
I'm just saying.
I think it's, you know, but then, like, even to think about, right, then to hold the mirror, right, to us, right? Like, we work in advocacy, right? And it's not just, like, rich black people who are told, like, no, you don't got time. It's all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Like I am told, because of my positionality, I have to always say yes. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I can't. Sometimes I can't get out of bed. Sometimes I literally am physically so tired that, like, I can't move. Mm-hmm. And, like, and I just started really being honest about my own mental health stuff and really being honest about my physical stuff, like, just this year. And it's because there would be times when I had to say no because I couldn't. And I think that, but when we all are committed to each other as a community, they don't always gotta come to me.
Right.
They can come to somebody else, right? And then somebody can come to me and give me a little more love. And then I can get strong and I can go back out there and do what I have to do.
Kanye just needs some love.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you
he
may
pay
right.
me. I could do the work.
Right. Well, apparently his last assistant crashed his Maybach as soon as he got it out. So, you know, he may be looking for some folks on that staff with a little bit more responsibility. But, no, great points all around. Fantastic panel, as always, here on By Any Means Necessary. So keep listening to us in 2017. I bet you everyone you heard here today will be back with us dropping some sage knowledge at some point in the next year. That is going to do it for today's show. And, of course, this is By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movement shaping the world around us. See you next time.
By Any Means Necessary.